Okay. So we are going to read a passage once again from page Samaches in the Feldheim edition. It's one that we focused on last week, but I said I wanted to highlight a different component or a different facet of this same comment of the Ramchal tonight. He is talking about Ma'achalos Asuros. Again, when in the context of Nikios, Perak Yud Aleph of the Mesilas Yesharim, he goes through a whole host of separate mitzvos. You will recall that he started with Gezel, and then he went through Arayos, and then he said he's going to go through lots of other mitzvos as well. And he started with Ma'achalos Asuros, foods that are prohibited for consumption. And in that context, he made the following comment. There's a paragraph, again, it's at the bottom of Samaches in the Feldheim. It begins with the word Behineh. Behineh mi sheyesh lo moach bekod kodo. Anybody with a brain in his head. Yachshov isurei hama'achal kama'achalim ha'arsiyim. Kama'achal shenis arbo is a davar arsi. You'll begin to perceive and think about food that is prohibited to you as if it's toxic, as if it's been contaminated with some kind of toxin so that it cannot be consumed. Kinei lu davar zeyera. He says, let's just think it through. If such a thing would happen, if you knew that something was contaminated with rat poison or something like that, hayakel adam al asma le'achol mimenu mishar lo bo'iza v'ismechosh, would you go ahead and say, oh, you know what, maybe it's okay. Maybe it's a, you know, I don't know if this is a, you know, it doesn't reach the FDA standard level of Ashkacha, but it reaches China's level of Ashkacha, and maybe some are somech on that, maybe that's good enough, and then I'm going to eat it. Obviously, you would not. Even if it was a minor suffix, you certainly wouldn't be makil, you would be strict. And if you would be makil, people would rightly identify you as a fool. It doesn't make any sense. Similarly, food that is spiritually toxic, that is prohibited, that is off limits, it's a kind of toxin for your heart, for your soul. How can you possibly be lenient if you have, again, any seichel, any common sense that is dictating and governing your choices and actions? That was the passage that we read in the Ramchal. Last time we discussed this more from what I called a theological standpoint or a hashkafic standpoint. I was talking about different ways of perceiving the laws of halacha. Are they like laws of a municipal government or a state government or a federal government? Or are they the laws of physics, like the laws of nature that are built into the fabric of the universe? And I was arguing that as much as people often refer to halacha as the former, they are much more akin to the latter. HaKadosh Baruch Hu built physical laws and properties into the universe, and he built spiritual laws and properties into the universe as well. And therefore, the comparison between something that's perceived as toxic from a physical standpoint or toxic from a spiritual standpoint actually resonates deeply from a hashkafic standpoint, from a theological standpoint, when you view the halacha through that prism. And as we noted, that can explain lots of other halachos, why there's a concept of isur b'shogeg if you do something by mistake, and why the minutiae, why the details matter, and things like that. But I think there's a musar point to be said here as well, beyond that theological takeaway. And that pertains to how we approach Isur. And, you know, he gives the example of Ma'achalos Asuros. It can certainly be expanded to other areas, as we'll see in a moment. But how we approach things and what our perspective is when we approach matters of Isur Beheter. And I guess this, for me, it's a springboard to talk about the concept of Chumrah. When is Chumrah appropriate? Chumrah, halachic stringency. When is it appropriate to take upon oneself Chumros? Now, the concept of Chumrah is fraught because, again, there are lots of different types of chumras, as I guess we'll begin to outline in a moment. And one always has to bear in mind that, as my Rebbe Rav Willig is fond of saying, every chumra is also a kula. You also have to recognize that, right? When very often there's a trade-off when it comes to a chumra. If you have a chumra in X, it's a kula in Y. You have a chumra in getting rid of your chametz, that's a kula in Shalom Bayis, as one that Rav Willig often highlights. There's a story behind that in my personal context, but that's for another time. So I'll tell you the story quickly. I always wanted to get rid of my chametz. I don't like selling chametz gomer, like real chametz. I prefer to just get rid of it. So when we first got married, my wife was like, no way, I'm not doing that logistical undertaking. And whenever people tell that to Rav Willig, like, you know, what does Rebbe think about getting rid of your chametz? His response is, what does your wife think? That's enough. What does your wife think? That's his response. So we weren't doing it, and like I really wanted to. So then one year, Rina asked me, what do you want for your birthday? And I said, I really want to get rid of my chametz this year. And she felt so guilty about that, and that's what I asked for. Now we get rid of all the chametz gomer. We do not sell chametz gomer. We get rid of it. But again, every chumrah is also a kula, and you need to play out circumstances. You have to always have to recognize, again, not the shalom bias constraints, but whatever other constraints a chumrah may be. But what is chumrah about? And here, I think it's worth highlighting different forms of chumrah. Sometimes chumrah is just about what I'll call shita chapping. You're looking to chop different shitos. There are four different shitos on an issue, and I want to grab as many of them as I can. It's almost like a collection. And I think when it's done in a narrow sense, it's not the ideal form of chumrah. I think in certain ways it can be an ideal form of chumrah, as we'll highlight in a moment. But if it's just about grabbing more shitos, to me that's a lesser, I guess, ideal of chumrah. It's almost reminiscent of the Vilna Gaon. The Vilna Gaon never put on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin. And when they asked the Gra, why didn't you put on Rabbeinu Tam Tefillin? His response was, if I took every single machlokas Rishonim that exists about Tefillin and I put together all the permutations, I'd spend all day putting on Tefillin. He says, I think he came up with over 60 permutations of different types of Tefillin that he would wear when you combine all the different debates among the Rishonim as to how Tefillin should be properly constituted and constructed. So he said, if you're just trying to chop all the shitos, then you'd end up there, the Ein Lo Davar Sof, he was saying. You just end up with more and more, and you have to just, again, you'd add chumrah al gabei chumrah, it never ends. So I think, again, that's to me, I would guess, I'm not saying there's no value in that, it's good to be yotzei according to more shitos, but to me it's not the highest level of chumrah, or the highest value of chumrah. I think chumrah takes on value in several other ways. Sometimes chumrah is a means of highlighting a different spiritual component of a mitzvah, and a valuable spiritual component of a mitzvah. Let me give you several examples. One chumrah that I personally like, I'm just giving you, again, personal examples from chumrahs that I personally, really take to. Washing one's hands with a kli before davening. Now, why is that significant? Mishnah Berurah says, in most cases, you certainly don't have to wash your hands with a cup before davening. He says, you may not even have to, in many circumstances, wash your hands at all before davening. So why do I try to wash my hands with a cup before davening? If you look in the Rambam says that tefillah is akin to avoda in the Beis HaMikdash. And just like the Kohanim used to wash their hands from the kiyor before they would do service in the Beis HaMikdash, you should wash your hands before you daven. Now, to me, that's not just a chumrah. It's a chumrah that highlights a totally new component of what we do when we come to Shul to daven, and a really valuable component of what we do. We know that tefillah is called avoda, that in the absence of avoda in the Beis HaMikdash, tefillah is what takes its purpose. We also know that because we do tefillah three times a day, it's very easy for it to become just a rote recitation. And frankly, when you wash your hands three times a day, it's easy for that to become a rote recitation as well. When you take a moment to think about the fact that you are washing your hands before davening the way the Kohanim did in the Beis HaMikdash, that's a very powerful statement about what you're about to do. It's a very powerful statement about the sublime character of the spiritual exercise that you're about to engage in. So to me, when you wash your hands, it's a simple act, but it's not just a chumrah that you're just adding because. It's a chumrah that adds a totally new dimension to the mitzvah. I gave the example of getting rid of chametz on Pesach, which again, maybe that's a little bit different, but I think that's definitely in the spirit of the mitzvah of actually removing chametz from one's rishos. I'll give you another example. When it comes to standing for Kriyas HaTorah, the Maharam Mirutenberg had a chumrah to stand for Kriyas HaTorah. Why? Because he said Kriyas HaTorah, every time we read the Torah, it's akin to receiving Ma'amad Har Sinai. It's akin to receiving the Torah at Har Sinai. So again, that's a chumrah that's not just, I'm going to exercise a little bit and I'm going to stand up during Kriyas HaTorah. It really highlights a whole new facet and component of the mitzvah that really adds very powerful symbolic resonance to it. And again, those are some of the chumrahs, again, on a personal level, that I really take to. So I think sometimes chumrah is not just about gathering more shitos. It's about, sometimes when you observe a chumrah, it's a way of highlighting, enhancing and highlighting a totally new dimension and component of a mitzvah. And sometimes chumrah is also just a way of expressing that you take things very seriously. And that's where we come back to this statement of the Mesillas Yesharim. The Mesillas Yesharim says, look, there's certain circumstances where maybe there's suffix involved, right? That's the whole underlying theme of Perek Yud Aleph, of this Midas HaNekiyos, that it's not black and white, it's not definitely not kosher. It's just possibly. He says, if you took this seriously, if this were a matter of your personal health, and you're dealing with a potential toxin that could poison you and make you sick, then you're going to approach it in a certain way, and your calculations regarding what's an acceptable risk and what's not will be reflected accordingly in terms of how you make choices in cases of doubt, in cases of suffix, in cases of uncertainty. And if you take it seriously, then you're going to make choices in accordance with that the appropriate risk calculation that goes along with that seriousness. Again, let me give other examples. There's a discussion on one of the rabbinic chats that I'm on about shatness, and whether or not you need to check for shatness. Well, I mean, you always need to, you don't always need to check for shotness. Of course, shotness is a prohibition. But let's say I'm buying like a cheap suit, nothing too expensive, which in the overwhelming majority of cases does not have wool and linen. It doesn't have actual shotness in it. Am I obligated to check in those circumstances, or am I not? Now, the prevalent psak that's given by Rav Shechter is the psak that I give as well. Is that if it's a miyot she'eino matzoi, if it's less than 10%, there's less than a 10% chance that shotness is in the suit, then you don't need to check for it. That's Rav Shechter's psak, and I think it's the prevalent psak in our community. And again, in most cases, I'm sorry? So you have to speak to mumchim, you have to speak to experts who are really reliable on these topics, but usually they know. Usually below a certain price point, it's far less than 10%. It's extraordinarily rare that shotness would be included, and in those circumstances, me'ikra din halacha l'maisa, you don't need to check. Somebody commented on this string that as much as that's true, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein Zatzal, when he would buy a suit, would always check no matter what. Why? It's Miyot She'eino Matzoi. Lichtenstein was a very halachic Jew. He felt that as much as he'd be willing to rely on the principles of Rov and Miyot She'eino Matzoi in a one-time instance, he's having a meal one time, and there's a Miyot She'eino Matzoi that there was a problem, and let's say, Me'ikra Din halachically speaking, there's Bitul B'Rov, Bitul B'Shishah, whatever the case may be, he'd be comfortable relying in one instance. When it comes to a suit that he's wearing over and over and over again, every single day, it's going to be something that he's constantly putting on, even just that very remote chance that perhaps there was shotness in it was enough to scare him to check it. And again, he was a very halakhic Jew. He didn't dispute the psak per se. He didn't say that, oh, it's usher to do it. He would tell you that it is mutter to do it. But for him personally, he was so frightened by the possibility that every day he'd be putting on a suit, or once a week, whatever the case may be, he'd be putting on a suit that had shotness in it, he felt compelled to check. My Rebbe, Rav Daniel Schreiber, said that when he would ask Shailas to Rav Lichtenstein, he had to be very careful about the language that he used to ask. When he would ask, what is the halacha, he would get one psak. When he would ask, what do you do, he would get a different psak. He would get a different response. Because again, he didn't feel it was absolutely necessary, but if you're taking this seriously, then you're going to go to further lengths. Lahavdil, just again, to give another example for myself, not to compare at all. But I recently got into a discussion with somebody about this, about shavers, about the Norelco lift and cut. That was like a famously like halachic controversy. Is the Norelco lift and cut okay? So many poskim are against it. Moshe Feinstein Paskin that it is okay. My Rebbe, Rav Schreiber, who I just mentioned, did extensive research into the topic. There was a whole debate as to whether or not Rav Moshe Feinstein truly understood the metzias. Did he really, like, fully understand the technology behind the lift and cut? He did extensive research. He contacted Norelco. He got, I don't even know how they took this. He got, like, some micro footage, like this footage of the shaver cutting, right. I don't know how they do it. It must be like a microscope or something like that. And how it cuts. And he confirmed, he feels very definitively that Rav Moshe's psak is correct, and that Me'ikra Din it is mutter. And that's the psak that I followed for a long time. I had that regular Norelco lift and cut for a very long time. My shaver, you know, they have a lifespan. Whatever that lifespan is, it conked out. When I was getting a new one, I decided that I was going to get one without lifts. Not because I passed that you have to. And again, if I still had that old one, I'd probably continue using it as for its lifetime, as long as I had it. But once I was getting a new one, and again, I'm not so mopping on the closest shave in the world. And like, if it's something that I was doing every single day, that comment about shotness from a Wolfenstein really rang in my mind. This is something that I'm doing regularly. It's not a one-time thing. And if that's the case, again, if there were a chashash that it would cause some kind of bodily harm, then I probably wouldn't do so. So, in the context of halacha as well, there are instances where perhaps we should go the extra mile, and perhaps if we're taking it seriously, it's worthy of adoption of a chumrah. Now, again, if you apply that reductio ad absurdum, then you could adopt every single chumrah in the world. So part of this is having the seichel, as the Ramchal describes, to know when it's appropriate to adopt chumrah and when not. We don't embrace the mentality that says, I'm just going to adopt chumrah in every instance. It's what we call a chassid shota. That's not a good thing. But at least having some areas where we say, I take this seriously, and therefore I'm going to assess my risk accordingly. I'm not just going to look for a potential leniency. I'm not going to look for, certainly not a loophole. I'm not going to look to get out of things, but if I really do approach my halakhic life seriously, and I take its value seriously, I'm going to assess risk accordingly. And in certain instances, I'll be willing to adopt stringency as a result. I think that's very much in line with this analogy of the Ramchal and the spirit of Nikios that he is describing. That, again, it's something that even if there's room for leniency, even if there's a gray area, even if it's not black and white, there should be instances where we appreciate the gravity and seriousness of halacha and its role in our lives, and accordingly attempt to go the extra mile in making sure that we properly fulfill its mandates.